On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Andrea Hayden of the Minnesota Twins organization. Andrea, thank you for coming on. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me on. Currently I'm the Major League Assistant Strength and Conditioning Coach with the Minnesota Twins. I'm getting ready to enter into my second year with them right now.
And tell me your journey to this role. I know last year you were a fellow in the position, but what is your journey to this role prior to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of describe my journey as untraditional in every sense of the word and never really followed the path that's usually handed out. So right out in high school, school kind of came hard for me. It wasn't super easy. And, sports are what kept my grades, above the line. Right out of high school, I kind of just jumped into the personal training world that kind of seemed the easiest route and kind of seen what was handed out there. And I kind of followed that. And after that, got a little burnt out with training the soccer moms and realized I wasn't really following a passion and wasn't really doing everything that I feel like I had the potential to do. So, at the age of 24, I humbled myself and went to school with all the 18-year-olds and went to a local university here in St. Louis called Missouri Baptist. There I received my exercise science degree and was fortunate to get on an athletic scholarship to actually train their women's softball and women's track and field team. So that was like my first real exposure to training athletes and working with them. And I look back and think that thankful I never really hurt anybody with the programs I rode and limited knowledge I had. So knowing that, I knew I needed to get more and more. And I always felt like I was behind. Like I felt like being older and missing out on stuff, I really struggled with feeling like I had to catch up. And so from that, I kind of just started reaching out to as many coaches as I could and really tried to gain knowledge from them. Thankfully, most coaches in our field are really friendly and kind to reach out back and have a lot of phone calls. But after finishing my undergrad, I went and interned at Exos in San Diego. That was a great experience. And then made my way back to St. Louis, where I took the graduate assistant position at Lindenwood University. Finishing that first year there, I interned at the University of Louisville under Tina Murray and her really great staff there. She was kind to open up some doors for me with USA Hockey. And so some of that summer I spent doing some development camps there. While being at the camp, I met a coach who was working with the Chinese women's professional team. And so I actually finished up the rest of my summer over in China working with their women's hockey team. Made my way back to the U.S. and finished up my second year with Lindenwood as a GA. We had some shifts in our department about October of my second year, which opened up a full-time position. So I got an opportunity to step into that full-time role. Finished my master's in human performance and then just stayed on full time. And then it wasn't until February I received a phone call from Ian Kadish, who's the director of Minnesota Twins Strength and Conditioning. And we talked, and 5 days later, my car was packed up and I was headed down to spring training to jump on that. So, like I said, untraditional in every aspect of it, but I'm really fortunate to be where I am.
Very untraditional. Do you play any hockey? Do you get on the ice at all?
Oh, no.
Oh, you just trained. I was hoping that I was hoping that you played a little bit. We could talk about that instead. But no.
I love it.
So if you don't want to talk about it, we don't have to talk about it. But at winter meetings when we met, Ian did confirm that you are officially the first female major league strength coach. And so huge kudos, absolutely awesome. Congratulations. It was like pulling teeth to get you to say it, and you're very humble about it. But it is an enormous deal. So if you want to talk on it, you can. If you don't and you want to just brush to the next point, it's totally up to you. I just want you to feel comfortable one way or the other. So I'm going to leave it up to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. No, it is an honor. And I do try to stay humble because I do see it as still my job. And so I do know that there hasn't been a female yet. I know that'll change as we keep going. So I appreciate that. That's a kind word. I do know it's still my job, and I love what I do, and I don't think gender makes me better or worse at what I do. So sometimes I forget to it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a rock star, you're a rock star. That's all there is to it. If you're a good coach, you're a good coach. It doesn't matter what athletes you're working at or with, what sport, what school. If you're a good coach, you're a good coach, period. And Ian spoke very highly of you. And you know, we had a female win a strength and conditioning coach of the year award at the winter meetings. And so it's awesome, and I think it's great. And you're very humble about it. And like you said, you take your job serious regardless of where you're at. And obviously, your path has been all over, so you've been everywhere. So, kind of with that, I just want to hear your best professional baseball story. And I know you only had the one season last year, and you guys did have a really successful year in the big leagues. Is there anything that sticks out in your mind so far from professional baseball?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're being your first year in general, but as I say, you're drinking out of a fire hose. It seems like there's so much stuff happening. So I could list off hundreds of stories, but you know, the one that sticks out to me, which probably is the biggest one of the year, and I'll never forget the date. You know, September 25th, we're in Detroit, and we clinch the division. And just that celebration and the champagne and the eyes burning and sticky and covered in beer and champagne was just, it was a blast. And the opportunity to be with those guys and to celebrate the work that they put in for an entire season and to clinch that division title. It was just one of those surreal moments where you just realize like this is what it's kind of all about and competing at these high levels. It was just a really special moment that I won't forget, and I can still visualize and picture it, and I can still smell the champagne and all that stuff. So that was a surreal moment and made me just fall in love with the game even more.
Yeah, that's really cool that you get to kind of see the culmination of all that work really, you know, turn into something tangible and awesome for you guys. And it was a great season, and you guys have a good team moving forward. And I know you guys have a good manager, and Ian is awesome as well. So it sounds like a lot of good things coming out of Minnesota for sure. So any Twins fans listening, you know, they should definitely be excited for the future over in Minnesota.
Absolutely.
So, what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Yeah, I kind of think of two things. You know, one maybe on the more practical side, and then one kind of going to the personal side. But practically, I know the constant debate of arm care, and you know what's the typical way of, that has been done previously with you know the high band reps and dumbbell work, empty cans, all that stuff. So I think the more I jump in and get involved, and the more I'm learning, I kind of have a hard time thinking that that is the best bang for our buck in a sense. You know, and I kind of see that we're with the dumbbell work, you know, we're really activating a lot of those deltoids and those traps and those scalenes and not really activating that cuff work as much. So, you know, we really focus on three big things, you know, the scap on rib, how well does the scap upwardly rotate around that rib cage, the ball and socket, you know, what is the humerus head, is it able to move within that joint? And then rhythmic stabilizations, you know, how strong is that posterior cuff? Is it able to stabilize that humeral head? So we kind of focus on those three things. For our arm care, but you know, we can always make the argument that you know, all training is arm care to some degree. So I think that maybe is more on a newer cutting edge of thought process. And then, personally, and you kind of talked about a little bit, but you know, the most common question I get is like, what is it like working in that male dominated industry? And I kindly and politely ask them if they know what the definition of dominate is, you know, and that definition is commanding and governing and controlling and superior, you know, overlooked, overshadowed. And I don't let anyone have that type of relationship, you know, with me. So I said I don't work in a male-dominated industry. I work in a male-majority industry. There's just more of them than me. So I think it's really important that we're being aware of our vocabulary and what we use it and what we label things. I'm not naive to think that gender discrimination doesn't happen, but that just hasn't been my story or my experience, so I can't speak on that. I can only speak on how fortunate I've been to be around some really incredible guys that have always supported me, never made me feel less than or less valued. They've always included me, always appreciated me, never felt second class to them. So I think it comes down to how we carry ourselves as women, you know, building the right relationships, being great at our craft, and then, you know, pushing those doors open ourselves.
Yeah, those are both awesome points. And like you said, if you build relationships with the players, like they're gonna like you regardless of, you know, who you are. Especially in baseball, you know, I think guys get a bad rep for like being bad people sometimes. And like when you get to know them, like they're awesome dudes, and you know, they treat everybody well. Like it's they're gonna joke around with you, and that means they like you. Like if they pick on you, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, she's a girl, we're gonna pick on her. Like they look at me and they're like, oh, that guy's a meathead. Let's pick on him. Like, it doesn't matter to them. Like, you know, if they pick on you, they probably like you. So it sounds like you're doing an awesome job over there. And like I said, Ian speaks very highly of you. And then with the arm care stuff, like, for you, I think it's good because you kind of have an unbiased view. Like, some people got into baseball early and then they've been around, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, and all they've known is that kind of old school arm care stuff. And I think it's kind of evolved beyond that, our understanding and our knowledge. And so for you, like, it was your first year and you had no like preconceived notions or anything. It was just like, all right, what do we got? And like, Ian is on top of his stuff. So Ian is probably like, no, listen, this is how we're doing it. You're like, all right, well, it makes more sense to me anyway. So yeah, both very good points, very good talking points. So what do you think makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Maybe in general and then more specifically in a professional baseball setting.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, success in general is like the accomplishment of an aim or a purpose. And so I think defining success is always different for every individual. Like, in a general sense, I guess, like, I've been really fortunate to be at different levels. So whether it's the private sector, NAIA, Division II, Division I, you know, Olympic, professional. And I can't say that one was more successful, but I can say that each one played an intricate role into the position I'm in today. And so with that being, that's my success. It's just taking everything I could from each one of those opportunities. But if I was to really pinpoint, like, one thing that I think, looking back, has been like a backbone to all that success, in a sense, would be my network and the power of networking. And I have been so fortunate to have people that are willing to put their name on me and vouch for me and speak on my behalf. And I do see this in the most humble way, that I've never had to formally interview for any position, any internship that I have. It's solely been on a network, you know. And when I was in my undergrad, like I said, I felt behind. I felt like I'm coming in real late. I got to figure out how I can catch up quickly. And so at the time, like, LinkedIn was really new. So I, you know, made a LinkedIn account and just started searching for strength coaches, and just desperate for anyone that would jump on a call with me and I could ask them questions. And, you know, from there, typical strength coach, I made an Excel sheet and interact with the people that I talked to and their contact and last time I reached out to them. And then maybe a couple points that I learned from them or something that I was going to work on that they challenged me with, and kept that evolving Excel sheet going. And I still use it today. Like, as I'm meeting more coaches, you know, we just get back from winter meetings and I got a chance to meet a lot of new ones, you know, add them to my list and make sure I keep in touch with them. But, you know, when I would reach out to them and ask them questions, it was never in the interest of seeing if they would offer me a job or throw me a line. It was just, you know, desperation of learning. And so I think that any opportunity I've had has just been boldness of reaching out and then, you know, hoping they see value in me as well. The two-way street of networking, and then they've always vouched for me, which has been really, really, really helpful. So I think on the general setting, network has always been, like, what has been the backbone of my success. And then considering more of a professional baseball setting, you know, like I said, I'm still new to it and still learning and trying to grow as fast as possible. And I think Ian did a great job at speaking at the winter meetings on this topic too, but I think we're headed kind of in a new direction that extends beyond just the skill set of our basic training as strength coaches. And we need to spend more time really knowing our assessments and movement assessments. I think we need to start assessing movement quality and movement efficiency and tailoring it to both the pitching and hitting mechanics, and then communicating that with the players in the weight room. You know, are we using proper movement assessments that give insight into what's going on within the swing and throwing characteristics? You know, because if you look at pitching mechanics through that movement assessment, you'll see a better understanding of, you know, things like their pitch command and velo and arm care, and spin rates and other things like that. So I think we need to start really looking at our movement assessments. And this could help bridge the gap between, you know, our hitting and pitching coaches and open some really great doors for good communication. I just kind of see it ahead of that way, that says, like, are we really using our assessments? Can we assess physical limitations before we start implementing these mechanical solutions? You know, I use this example of, like, the pitching coach that's telling a guy to, like, lengthen his stride. But we never really even looked at his movement assessment to even know if he has physical limitations that wouldn't even allow him. Like, what's his adductors like? What is his pelvic control, his strength? Or giving, like, the old coaching, like, the cue of get on top of the ball. It's like, but does he have that scap upward rotation? You know, does he have overhead flexion? Can he even get overhead? You know, these are things I have to answer before you start throwing out these mechanical solutions. So I think it's important that we do good screening, but, you know, how often are we having our athletes, you know, overhead squat and then we fix the knee valgus, we fix all these things, and now we've created a good squatter. But how does that actually affect the mechanics and their characteristics that they have out on the field?
Yeah, and in the past, I think it's always been a very big, like, stay in your lane. Everybody is in a silo. Strength coaches are not pitching coaches or hitting coaches, and the other way around, which is true. We are definitely not pitching and hitting coaches. And I think that line is kind of blurred sometimes where some people go too far, some people don't want to step on toes. And truth be told, I was talking with one of our other guys. We thought Ian's presentation at winter meetings was kind of that perfect spot where strength coaches should be. Have an understanding, have an idea of how to assess and correct, and how to have those conversations without the pitching coach thinking, oh, this guy wants my job now. Like, okay, go ahead, you run the pitching show. Like, no, it's not like that. Like, this is just what I know from a physical standpoint, and this is how we can help with the mechanics. And I think he was like spot on right where strength coaches should be. And it's a totally different thing than what strength coaches are used to. And it's a whole nother thing that we have to learn instead of just, the X's and O's of physiology and biology and then nutrition and then mental skills. It's just another hat we have to wear, but it's becoming part of the game. And so if you want to stick around, you got to evolve or you're gone. You know what I mean? So it's the harsh reality of how it is, I guess.
Yeah, I think at the winter meeting, someone, one of the presenters gave an analogy as like us being the pit crew, and that's just like a perfect picture of knowing we are. Like, can we be generalists in every space and know a little bit about everything and be able to speak the lingo and have a big part? Because I think we are undervalued and underappreciated, but I wonder how much we do contribute, outside that weight room. And that's like what I consider a lot of my responsibilities. When you're an assistant, you wear like a lot of hats. You're not just assisting. I assist Ian, obviously, and I take care of those players, but everyone in that clubhouse, my goal is to somehow serve them in some capacity. And so bridging that gap with language is a big part. So learning as much as I can from pitching coaches and hitting coaches and our ATs and PTs and nutritionists, and there's so many resources that I think we have to tap into. But not just, talk. We can, like we always say, we can talk about programming anytime with strength coaches, and you can talk the lingo with them, but outside of that field, can you contribute and can you be valuable to an entire clubhouse, and not just your weight room and not just your little department?
Yeah, that's really well said, and I like the idea of serving everybody. Everybody kind of comes to you at some point with something, whether it's pitching coach, hitting coach, manager, players, ATs, and if you can help them, like you leave a good impression in their mind. They're like, okay, that person's good at their job, and even if it's something that has nothing to do with our job, but you can help them out, like they're just gonna look at you in a better light, anyways. And then when something actually does come up that's relevant to your job, like, you have that on your side. So I'm right there with you. Do you have any advice for others in the field, maybe young coaches that are just kind of getting started, or even older coaches that have been around a while? Just anything that you think is relevant?
Yeah, I think when I think about some of the best advice I've received, and I'm still gaining more and more. One of my internships when I was few years back when I was younger, and someone gave me this three words, and it's well better learned. And it just represents a self-reflective thought. And so it's in any situation that you go through, whether it's a meeting, a training session, whatever it is, you ask yourself three questions. What did I do well? What can I do better? And then what did I learn? And so I keep like a little journal of those self-reflective thoughts. So if a staff meeting and I come out of it and I was like, oh, okay, I communicated that part well, I could have done way better at this. And I learned that in the process. But I think if we're always seeking feedback. But I think we're always our hardest critic as well. So if we can spend more time doing self-reflection and seeing different things and what we can do better and keep growing in that, I've seen that pay off dividends for me in anything I've done. So just well better learned. I have it written down. It sits on my little desk up in Minnesota. And I kind of reflect on it often.
Nice. I like that. Yeah. And self-reflecting, honestly, like you said, we're our own, our own biggest critics sometimes. So, sitting down with yourself and your own thoughts and just kind of clearing out what was good, what isn't, is definitely a good practice for people. And sometimes we don't take the time to do it. And we're so busy that we don't have time to do it. But I think if we just carve out a few minutes to just kind of sit back and think about some things, like, it goes a long way for sure.
100%.
Do you have any continuing education resources for us? Maybe books that you're reading or have read, seminars you've attended, maybe even podcasts you're listening to?
Yeah, when I was younger, I hated reading. My dad had the quote of "readers are leaders," and he always wanted me to read, and I just always dragged my heels in because it was something I didn't enjoy, but I think as you get older, like, I love to read. Like, I look forward to Amazon. My wish list is just all books, you know. So I just finished The Passion Paradox. That was a great read. And some that have been pivotal for me, you know, obviously Legacy, Chopwood Carry Water is a great one. Leaders Eat Last. And then I really love always like The Power Positions by Andrew Ahudi. And Brian Mann has a great book on velocity-based training, conscious coaching, you know, Brett Bartholomew. I could just list off tons of books that have been really impactful for me. As far as seminars, you know, we just went to the winter meetings, and I thought that was great. I really enjoyed it. It was my first one. There was a lot of great presenters and great presentations that I'm still reflecting on and taking some notes over and going back to their PowerPoints. I'm going to check out the World Congress pitching coming up here in St. Louis. So I'm kind of excited about that. Or sorry, World Pitching Congress. I'm here in St. Louis. So I'm pretty pumped about checking out that seminar as well. Podcasts. I have a few go-tos. I like the Andy Stanley. He's on leadership, finding mastery, the Pacey performance. I always love Brett Bartholomew's Art of Coaching, and then Strong by Science. There's a few I kind of just look at often, but those are always my go-tos.
Yeah, it sounds like you're not limiting yourself, which is good. I mean, you can find something useful just about anywhere. And then the winter meetings this year, just talking to some other guys, like they said, honestly, this was probably like a top three winter meetings for them. And I liked the combination of the strength coaches and the ATs on the last day. I thought that was a really like something interesting and something I think we should probably do more often, just collabing. Instead of having, you know, they're right next door having their meetings, and like, why not just put us together? So whoever idea that was, like, I actually really like that, and I think we should probably do it more in the future. So
that's what we talked about. That's hopefully continues to grow in that new mindset of no longer silos and staying in your lane, but really collaborating and seeing the benefit of everyone's skill and their craft, and how we can actually kind of approach it more in a team mindset for the benefit of that player and athlete. So I think the more that we can mimic that through ourselves and our own meetings, you know, the more it's going to come out in our own clubhouses.
Yeah, agreed. 100%. 100%. I know you said you want to keep it short. I got a 4-question lightning round. Are you down for it?
Let's go.
Okay. First question. Biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning. Who is it?
I don't ever think you can pick one. I never wanted to pick one. So I had to list them all off. You know, I think Tina Murray at the Sacramento Kings, and Andrew Hoodie with Texas, Mal Benetti out at South Carolina, Stephanie Mock. Then you got your Brett Bartholomew, Ryan Horn, Corey Schlesinger's out of good content. And then I got to brag about my own Ian Kadish. So I think there's people that are contributing a lots of different things. So I don't know how you just pick one.
Yeah, I agree. Very hard question. And most people list more than one. So that's okay. Maybe I'll change it to biggest influences just so that people don't feel so bad about picking one. One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Kettlebell, of course. I think it's the most versatile. Anything from carries, swings, rows, deadlifts, squats, the dynamic component of it. Tempo is regression, progression. I think that's always my go-to.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
You know, I always say that my education is probably my biggest accomplishment, you know, just humbling yourself and going back to school. And then, so finishing in a degree in undergrad and then having a master's, sometimes it's kind of surreal for me. But really, really being honest, in 2014, I rescued a pup. His name's Toby, and he's been along this whole journey with me. And so I feel pretty, pretty proud of him. So I would pick that as a big accomplishment for me.
Love that one. Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I think I would definitely still stay in the realm of sports. So I'd probably have to say like a sports psychologist or an athletic director of something like that. Or honestly, anything that works with dogs, probably one of those.
Yeah, those are like two of the best things in life, right? Sports and dogs. Well, Andrea, I appreciate you spending some time with me. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more? Are you on social media or is there a better place to get in touch?
Thanks, Chris. I do have a Twitter. I'm not the most active on it, but it's what is it now? It's Andrea Hayden Strength. And then obviously email is also a good way to grab a hold of me too.
Perfect. Well, like I said, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll be catching up real soon.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, everybody. That concludes this episode with Andrea. I hope you enjoyed this one. I think there was a lot of really good information that was shared, especially in the talk on arm care and on being successful. Three things that I took from Andrea in this episode: understand the power of networking, know your assessments, and work to self-reflect more. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.